welcome to the Hard News Call with Tara and Rama on Friday night. We are so grateful that you have joined us here tonight, and we're grateful for all of our lives. This is Rainbird, and we're enjoying a 9-con seed that created seed today in the Mayan calendar with that good expansion energy of 9. And so that place of expanding our potential in our hearts. So let's go into that heart space and go to that place of quiet. I want to put a few people in the circle of support tonight. I want to put Angel Sue and Harriet in the circle of support for their continuing healing process. And then also Deanna's dog, Jenny, who has a torn ligament and might need surgery and needs donations and for that. Or maybe we can just do instant healing here with that torn ligament. So our prayers for Jenny and our prayers for Deanna and her continued good health and her healing process. So let's put all of them in and then all of ourselves as well. So that, and whoever else we know to put into that circle. So thank you for that. And let's go back into that heart space and let's take those 3 gentle breaths that allow us just to let go of the day and draw us and do those breaths through the nose, out the mouth, or any way you like to do the breathing exercise. We're just wanting to get centered in our heart space. So as we do this, let's call in those 7 sacred directions and give our gratitude that way. All you good gatekeepers of the East, come. Look this way. Join us here at this Rainbow Rose Roundtable. As we begin our council, we're grateful for that rising sun, that great central sun. Thank you for the love that you send to us. And that energy, as it increases every day, we're grateful to be able to keep up and keep up with that. And we're so grateful for the assistance and the ease and the grace it brings into our lives. We're grateful for the illumination that it brings so that we might understand ourselves and our world in a better way, in a more loving way. We're grateful for those white knights and their missions, and all that they do. To see that things get done at this time in our lives, and we are grateful to be supportive to them as they do their most difficult work in the most difficult of times. And so we send our love that way. We're grateful for Eagle and carrying that big vision. We're grateful for our vision, that vision of Nisera occurring in our immediate future in this now moment. Yeah, we call that one in. We're so grateful for that Lady Master Nisara and Lady Liberty and Justice and Freedom and all of these masters of the new age and divine governance. So thank you. Thank you, all you good gatekeepers of the East. Thank you, Eagle and Condor, tying us to that vision like that. Thank you for joining us here tonight. And all you good gatekeepers of the North, those teachers and midwives, and those gatekeepers that link between that past and future, that birth and death, Thank you for that. Midwifing. Thank you for midwifing us through this age, into this new age in an easy and graceful way. Thank you for that cold, hard truth. Thank you for how all that increases our knowledge and our understanding, overstanding. Thank you for our teachers, teachers, teachers. Thank you for midwifing us between the worlds like that as we bring heaven to earth and earth to heaven. So thank you. Thank you, Python, for showing us that abundance is ours to claim in our lives as we stand in our truth. And Elk for showing us how to walk in grace. Thank you, all you good gatekeepers of the North. Thank you for joining us here at this round table. And all you good gatekeepers of the West, come, look this way. Join us here as we gather around this Rainbow Rose round table. We're grateful for that inaugural time, that setting sun, that bringing in that darkness, that place of going within, working in the dream time, working in real time. Thank you, Death. Cleaning up what no longer serves us. Thank you for that opportunity to be reborn. Thank you. Thank you, Bear, for reminding us how to go within like that, that introspection, that quiet place. And thank you, Horse, for showing us how to stand in our power. And thank you, Jaguar, for letting us ride on your back. So thank you, all you good gatekeepers of the West. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all that you do. And all you good gatekeepers of the South, come this way. We're so grateful for you. We're grateful for that corn in our lives, and growing corn in our lives, growing our abundance. We're grateful for all those healing plants that spring up in the South and show us new ways of getting better and healing ourselves. And we're grateful for the children in our lives. Thank you for that laughter and all the songs and that playtime. And thank you for reminding us how to trust and how to communicate telepathically in many different ways and all the forms that it takes. So thank you, all you good animal spirits of the South, like coyote medicine. Bringing a little humor into our lives, and that rabbit medicine, that kind of trickster. Thank you for showing up in our lives like you do, so that we can laugh at ourselves. And thank you for the laughter of the children and that place in our hearts that remains as a child. We honor that. So thank you. Thank you, Mouse, for showing us how to look up close at things. Get a different discernment. So thank you, all you good beings of the South. Thank you for joining us. Sky Nation, come, look this way. Great central sun, and Helios, and Vestas. The sun, and all of our solar system and family. Thank you for joining us as we go through this shift here that we all go through. May our lives be a blessing to you as yours is a blessing to us. We're so grateful for you. We're grateful to get to know you better and see the vast places in space that we've never visited before. We're grateful to be going home. So thank you, all you star beings, all you brothers and sisters of the Sky Nation. And thank you, rain and lightning and stormy weather. Thank you for lighting that clear thought. Thank you for all the ways that the rain can come and make the gardens grow and the flowers bloom. So thank you, all you Sky Nation people. Thank you for joining us here. Mother Earth, Pachamama, come join us here as we do this good work here around this round table. We are so grateful for your life and for all of our lives, and grateful for that gift of all of your gifts in your kingdoms and in your elementals and in the fire, the water, the earth, the air, the ether. Thank you. Thank you for your beauty. We're so grateful for your healing and for your ascension path, as we are for our own selves, our own path that way. We're grateful for healing. We're grateful for following the laws of nature and nature's God in our hearts, and not transgressing on you anymore, but healing instead. So, ho'oponopono. Thank you for your heartbeat. Thank you for joining us here tonight. Oh. And ancestors, come join us here as we gather around this round table. All you ancestors back 7 generations and beyond, and all you ancestors forward 7 generations and beyond, come join us. We are so grateful. We are grateful for your lives and your hearts, your bone memories. Well, thank you for that ancestral line, that lineage that connects us all together as one, as we share that same heartbeat. Thank you for witnessing the work that we do here and trusting us to do this good work at this very special time. We are honored and humbled. We're grateful for any assistance that you want to bring us. Whisper in our ears, we are listening and paying attention. Thank you, ancestors. Thank you for joining us here tonight. Oh. Oh. With that, let's just go into the housekeeping so that we cover all the bases. So we do present this program as a listener support program, for we're the ones that do this part. We need $300 a week, and this week we have $28 so far, so we only need $278, and that's good. We're keeping up. I'm proud of us all. We're doing a great job of keeping up, so go into that heart space and see what is yours to give. If you've never given before, I'm grateful for you finding new ways of creating your abundance by paying it forward. It is a very profound and fun way to engage with spirit. So it's an opportunity, and I'm grateful to be able to offer it to you as that. And the ways to make a donation to BBS Radio you can send a check or money order through the mail. Their address is BBS Network, Inc., or Incorporated, 5167 Toyon Lane, Toyon Lane, at Paradise, California, 95969. Write "Attention Don" on that envelope and put a little memo in there that it's for Tara and Rama and Marita's shows. And that'll work. And then alternatively, you can go to the website, and that a web address is dbsradio.com. And then you click on Radio Station 2 and look for the icons for the Hard News Call on Friday, Guitar and Rama, or the History of Nisera Call and Our Galactic Origins on Saturday, Guitar and Rama, or Marita's Call on Thursday, the Stargate Roundtable. Any one of those icons will take you to where you need to go to make a donation there. And we're so grateful for that gift. And then as you are to send anything to Tara and Rama, their information is their website is 2013rainbowroundtable.ning.com. And there's a donate button on the homepage, and you can click on there and make a donation through Rama's PayPal. There's another location just above the blog section for that PayPal account, and that will work. And also, you can send something directly to Rama in the form of a cashier's check or a money order. That physical address is Ram D. Berkowitz, D-E-R-K. OWITV at 1704B, as in boy, Llano Street, LLANO, number 249. And that's in Santa Fe, New Mexico, 87505. And then as you're sending something, let them know through an email, Coran. 999 at Comcast.net. And if you need to make a phone contact, you can call Marita at 317-773-0061. So there you go. That's all the information. We have a lot of energy coming this way and work ahead of us, and I can feel it, but I feel like we need to keep that canoe in the middle of the river. And so there you go. I pass this talking stick to you, Tara and Rama. Greetings.
Greetings.
Greetings and well met, everybody. I'm just going to say there's more lies in the news than there is news.
Yeah.
And it's very obvious. I mean, don't think it's just you. Remember that what they are is desperate. They know they're going down, and they're desperately trying to do something so that they don't go down and that we go down. And, I mean, this idea of NATO, I mean, the people that are running for that place there, this guy, he's backed by the United States. What's his name? Petro Poroshenko.
Oh, right.
And he's claiming that Putin's full of double talk.
And
it's just the opposite. He's full of double talk, and he's backed by the United States.
And these bankers and the European Union, which is a criminal organization.
And Yulia Tymoshenko is also running on the ticket. And remember, they're going to vote on Sunday. And I think there's elections somewhere else on Sunday. Where is that? Is that in Thailand, or is that the next month?
I
don't remember. But anyway, I'm just going to say that to keep it short, lies and more lies.
Brian Williams is going to interview Edward Snowden in Moscow.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And St. Petersburg Economic Summit is going on in St. Petersburg. And let's just send more love to these Western
oligarchs,
shenanigan oligarchs. Yeah,
yeah.
Because facing your own death and looking at it in the mirror while you're trying to do something, you know, they're trying to ram NATO right down the throats of Ukraine with this guy. It looks like he's going to get in. You know, he's an oligarch, but he says he got into Maidan Square and he tried to say, I'm for the people, you know, and he used that, but that was a premeditated setup, too.
And all of this has to tie in with that missile defense shield that they want to put up that they think is going to protect
Yeah,
them.
now they wanted to put it up in Ukraine, a little bit closer to, and they lied again and they said that Russia still's got their 40,000 troops on the mortar and they didn't move anything and they put up some pictures and some film, but it's not true. It's totally not true. Just
And
hang in there.
today was the last day of the Ed show. He has moved to the internet now. Starting on Tuesday, you go to wegoted.com and SiriusXM satellite radio, and you can hear him live. And he went to Rosebud, Nebraska, which is a reservation where these people are living the way Ed has described it. They're worse than the Somali people in this reservation. This right in the United States of America.
Where is that?
A place called Rosebud, Nebraska. It's the poorest reservation in the United States where these people, I
And
mean,
what are they doing to them?
well, they want to run the Keystone Oil Pipeline right through their reservation. And Ed has said, over my living body, are you going to do that?
Oh, yeah, he's been behind
Yeah.
that all along. And you know, Tom Hartman put the goo-goo syndrome guy, Paul Weyrich, back
Oh,
up there
yeah.
tonight. I don't want everyone to vote. As a matter of fact, our voting leverage goes up as the amount of voters goes down.
Yeah.
Routine. And again, we mentioned this yesterday. India's a, you know, got has an extreme right wing.
New
Backed by the
government.
U.S. new government with a third of their people, and that's a lot of people when there's all this, you know, 1.4 billion districts of people's, you know, representatives are super criminals, are all done horrible things, backed by the United States. And the European Union's got all these super right-wing candidates across all their countries trying to create that thing going on. And the European Union's going to have their elections. I guess that's when it's going to be this Sunday, too. That's where they're doing it. They're doing it Sunday in the European Union for the parliament, for the European Union parliament, for the whole thing. And of course, Portugal and Spain are not doing that. And that's because the power of the people in the tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands, getting in their face in the streets and holding fast to their hearts and to their wanting to have, you know, a democratic way of life that's basically a socialist way of life. And they're not letting them blame the socialists. And you know, they're blaming that over everywhere. Here we've got our extreme right wing, and don't believe anything you hear or see. Even the there was a convention or some kind of a gathering, and Eric Cantor's people, they booed him practically out of the
Oh,
room
good.
over and over again. But it was very ugly because they wanted him to be more right wing than he is. And I'm sitting there
Oh.
going, holy
Oh, my
macaroni,
God.
backed by the Koch brothers special. And I'm just saying it's a desperado
Oh,
situation.
and yeah, today sitting in for Ed was Mike Rogers, and the way he described it is, Ed Schultz is a meat-eating, gun-toting liberal, and he's not afraid to say, I'm a bleeding heart liberal, get over it. And then Mike Rogers said, I'm a vegan, I'm a member of PETA, and I'm gay. Get over it. And then they had on Mike Papantonio and Sam Cedar. And they went into a wild, fantastic story about the Koch brothers and Hitler and the Valkyrie and this absolute insane plan to get a hold of any kind of
Tell
supernatural.
people what the Valkyrie is.
The Valkyrie was Hitler's dream of somehow hooking up with Archangel Michael and the legions of angels that come in on the wing Pegasuses,
In the year of the horse, no less, everybody.
that's right. Yet,
Now, anyway.
that Armageddon story of Revelations has been canceled. And
Yeah, Lucifer came back to love. Remember, Revelations is canceled.
yeah.
And remember, I know it's hard, but the revaluation process is Lucifer's right arm.
Oh,
The
indeed.
whole thing was premeditatively planned. A lot of us got fooled by that, and we didn't find out. The only way to find out is to get into it until you find out, and then stop it. Don't go there anymore. And it's really important. Still got a chance to stop it, because as you're still supporting that in any way, shape, and form, they even put a fake Saint Germain meditation out the other day. That's not the real Saint Germain. Remember what David Icke said. They downloaded all these ascended masters through Mount Shasta, and they reprogrammed them with their own black op programming, and that's what they're using.
And it's going off now, where they are at the very, very, very last few final nanoseconds of the way the King of Swords described it to me today, is the energies have been turned up all the way. And as you do not focus on love, it's going to become very obvious and very not so good in the energies, because what's coming up is it's all to be healed right in this moment.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that because there's much
Yeah.
going on with this new moon coming up on Wednesday. I just wanted to say that also that there's a plot that these guys have wanted to do, and they've got that canceled too. They wanted to do this transhumanist agenda where the 13 family members wanted to transfer their soul matrix into android bodies like Data's and live forever, and that got canceled. All gone.
Yeah, we
So
don't need a
now the genetic modification process was the way to kill us all, to kill us all. And there's something like 64 countries now that have completely banned using genetic modified foods, and that's taking us down with that little stuff. And in the, just the beginning of this year, the farmers lost over $1 billion because it was rejected, all this food that they've grown, in the past and stored and tried to export it. They lost it. Okay, so we're going to go play something from Tom Hartman about this right now. I've got a few minutes. Whoops. Rama, Rama, Rama.
Okay.
Slow down, Moses.
It's I
Here, come
gotta
on.
move.
Pay attention. You just have to pay attention. Gotta look where you're going. Everything's still gonna be all right. Okay. Don't move that. Don't move that. You just need to move yourself.
In as much as 80% of the food we eat, some estimates, in as much as 80% of the food we eat. So what's the deal with GMOs? Can they ever be safe? And what should you know about what's probably going on inside your body with regard to GMOs? Joining me now for a special Conversations with Great Minds about GMOs are Marian Engelman Lotto, Managing Attorney for Earth Justice, Alexis Baden-Mayer, Political Director of the Organic Consumers Association, and David Murphy, Founder and Executive Director of Food Democracy Now. And thank you all for joining me tonight.
Thank
Great
you.
to have you with us.
Thank you.
Alexis, let's start out with basics. What is a GMO?
It's been modified
in a way that could not happen in nature. So the scientists have taken genetic material from one organism and put it into another. And most of the GMOs are modified to withstand herbicides. So the chemical companies have found an ingenious marketing strategy.
Yeah, and isn't the big taboo, is if that's the right word, the barrier that got broken with GMOs, is that, I mean, you know, when we used to hybridize plants, Mengele's famous, you know, pea experiments, and, you know, we were hybridizing plants. With GMOs, we're actually taking DNA out of bacteria, in the case of, like, BT corn, or out of animals, in the case of these glow-in-the-dark genes that are taken out of some kind of aquatic creature, and putting them in plants. Do I have that right?
That's absolutely right. And we also use antibiotics. The geneticists aren't so talented. They can't see up and down the DNA strand to see whether their trait got in there. So they attach an antibiotic-resistant marker gene, then they blast the petri dish with antibiotics, and the traits that survive are the ones that have the antibiotic-resistant gene attached to them.
Whoa!
Yeah, so there are antibiotics.
So we're spreading antibiotic resistance at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
That? Just as the process of inventing them, basically.
That's the way they do it.
And then they leave that gene in for all times.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. David, what's the rationale for having GMO foods?
Well, I think initially when they were introduced, they were talking about increasing yields and then saving on pesticides or herbicide costs for farmers. I think for the Roundup Ready gene, which is in 90% of corn and 94% of soybeans, really what they want to do is they're trying to make, they call it effective weed management tool. The problem is they've over-applied it in the last 16 years. We have 61 million acres of superweeds out in rural America. In Iowa, there's 31 million acres that are farmed. So the combination of all the farmland in Iowa and Nebraska covered in superweeds is choking farmers' profits. And that's the real problem with this technology. It's already obsolete 15 years after the first introduction.
So let me get this straight. The idea was, I mean, it used to be that they sprayed herbicides selectively. Like if you had rows of corn, you'd spray it between the rows of corn. You don't want to get it on the corn because it's going to kill the corn too, because herbicides, by definition, kill herbs, plants.
Kill weeds. Yeah.
They're plant killers as opposed to pesticides, which kill insects. And so if we can make the good plants, the edible plants, resistant to the herbicide, then we can just spray it from the air or any old way we want. But doesn't that mean that you could use less of it? I mean, why would that cause you to use more of it?
Well, that's the theory. Initially, in the first few years, they've always found wherever they introduce new Roundup Ready crops, that farmers actually do
Roundup
Ready crops, Roundup Ready soy and Roundup Ready cotton, Roundup Ready sugar beets, and Roundup Ready corn. The first few years, farmers do see a decrease in the use of herbicides. It saves them costs initially. The problem is nature is smarter than technology. Nature is smarter than man, always has a workaround. And so super weeds eventually become resistant, just like, you know, disease becomes resistant to antibiotics in hospitals and factory farms. So inevitably, no matter what herbicide they genetically engineered, the trait they put into these plants, they're going to become weeds. Right now,
this is evolution, isn't it? I mean, you know, whatever weeds happens to have the mutation that makes it resistant is going to be the only one that survives.
Absolutely. And the real problem with this is now the failure of Roundup is leading to new, more toxic crops. 2,4-D, which is half the chemical equation of Agent Orange, has been approved in soybeans, now waiting approval for corn from the Obama administration. And this is, rural America will be carpet bombed with 2,4-D. And that's one of the real problems we're trying to stop.
We're going to start spraying America with Agent Orange
or
something close to it. Marianne, where do we stand with the science on GMOs? There was a rat study that got rather famous and then got rather debunked. But other research particularly tying to Roundup, is starting to look pretty strange and scary. I mean, you've got these kidney failures that are happening down in Central and South America in the sugarcane fields. There's a lot of speculation now that this explosion of what seems like celiac disease around the United States might be associated with Roundup or one of these chemicals actually preventing glutenase, the enzyme, from cleaving gluten in the stomach so that it gets into the small intestine undigested. And these are just the ones that I've read about in the popular press. What's the state of science?
I want to defer to the scientists on the science.
Good idea.
On this call. I guess what I would reinforce, though, is that there are a lot of issues here that are all wrapped up together. There's the issue that many of us think about first. How do we protect ourselves? How do we protect our health? How do we protect our children? And then there's the issue of the environment, how we're protecting the water, and also the issue of farm workers. And how are we protecting farm workers? And I think if I could sum up, well, one of the key issues that often doesn't get enough attention with GMOs, it's pesticides. It's the millions of gallons of pesticides that are out there as a result of the growing use of GMOs. And we need to think about what are the protections for workers. Mm-hmm. That's something perhaps we'll have time to talk more about.
Yeah. Well, what specific protections would you like to see?
Well, for example, right now, one of the things we're working on is a worker protection standard at the Environmental Protection Agency. You know, workers in the field who are exposed to pesticides don't even have the same protections, things like equipment, barriers from reentry into a field after it's been sprayed, training, age limits that you see in the industrial sector. And why is that? Is it that this is a community that's disproportionately Latino? Is it the rise of big agriculture and the strength of the industry? But what we're seeing is that there is just not enough protection for farm workers. And so EPA has recently put out a revision of the worker protection standard. Crazily right now, kids under 16 in the fields, not just kids in family farms, but kids in general, can be handling pesticides. And EPA proposes to create an age limit for handling pesticides outside of family farms of under 16, that they'd be prohibited from handling pesticides. That seems to me pretty low. And so we should be thinking a lot more about who's exposed to pesticides and what are the impacts and what kinds of protections there should be.
And unlike herbicides, pesticides target our kingdom, the animal kingdom, and most of them are neurotoxins, or many of them are neurotoxins, to go after insects. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think we have to look at the same set of issues with herbicides as well, whether it's herbicides or pesticides, that whole range of chemicals that we're putting on our crops. I was told a story today by a colleague who had taken his family to Costa Rica on a trip, and they were on a tour bus, and they went to a banana farm. And they weren't allowed to get out of their bus at the banana farm. They were told, you can't get out of your bus because we don't want you to be exposed to pesticides. And when they looked out the window from their bus, they saw all these farm workers in the field. And they were thinking to themselves, wait a second, we're not even allowed to get out of the bus for a few minutes. And that same issue is, it's taking place in Costa Rica and it's taking place here. And wow. and I think we all need to think about that.
Wow. Alexis, the way that this stuff was sold wasn't just, hey, farmers, we'll make life easier for you. It was also, we're going to feed the world. Where are we at with that?
It's just completely false. One thing that I learned that I feel is interesting is that, most of the GMOs end up in CAFOs, the factory farms. We grow an enormous amount.
CAFO?
A concentrated animal feeding operation. Almost all of the corn and soy, which are our biggest GMO crops, they almost all end up in these factory farms feeding animals. So that's, one inefficiency. But what I just learned is we have enough area of grassland in the United States to raise even more beef than we are producing currently in these factory farms. So what do we need these GMO crops to feed the animals for? We could produce healthier, grass-fed, 100% grass-fed beef on our grasslands.
Wow. So, David, if it's all, is it just really all about making a buck?
It is for the chemical companies. We say this all the time. This is not about feeding the planet. This is not about improving yields or improving profits for farmers. It's about feeding chemical companies bottom line. And that's what they've done for 20 years. I mean, chemical companies 20 years, a little 25, 30 years ago, decided they needed to get into the genetic engineering business so they could have a patented seed with their herbicide, that gene patented into it. Then you spray that field, they get the profits. Monsanto gets profit not only selling the seed, but also the herbicide. And that's what Dow Chemical is getting ready to do with 2,4-D. So that, you know, they say a lot of things like they're gonna feed the planet. They're gonna save hungry, starving children. Everyone knows that the problem with food production is not that we don't have enough food. We have an overabundance of food. And genetic engineering, the other part of it, 40% in Iowa at least, 40% of GMOs, genetically engineered corn, is for ethanol. Another wasted use of very important farmland, not for human feed, but for to put in your gas tank for the one of the most efficient energy consumption processes that we've ever devised. But it's basically a subsidy for the, you know, GMO corn industry.
Right. And we could just as easily be covering that land with solar panels, it seems. I mean,
or healthy food.
Or
fruits and vegetables. Iowa used to have, farmers used, you know, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, 20 crops per average on a farm today. Today it's two, corn and soy.
Amazing.
That's what they rotate.
More of tonight's conversations with great minds about GMO foods after this break. Relationship between GMOs and chemistry, you know, basically chemical companies that just used to make solvents and things. What's the relationship between GMOs and big ag?
So to start with the relationship between, you know, chemical companies and GMOs, it's really remarkable that the six biggest companies behind GMOs are also producers of pesticides. And so there is a financial incentive with these genetically modified seeds to also be marketing pesticides. I think this fits into a larger context where we've moved from a more sustainable form of agriculture during at least my lifetime to a very unsustainable form of agriculture. And we've been talking about crop agriculture, where we're having the greater use of pesticides justified by this idea of feeding the world. And similarly in animal agriculture, we've moved from family-controlled farms to enormous farms. We have, and they're not even farms, they're facilities. We're working on a case involving an egg-laying facility with capacity for 4 million hens. We have cases involving thousands and thousands of hogs, and they're all confined. They're not roaming. This is not farms like we read about in the Big Red Barn, where they're roaming, you know, in the farmland. They're all confined in a facility. And the key thing to know is that the way in which this model has evolved is it's been directed not by the farmers, and not even good for the farmers. It's been directed by these big agricultural companies, whether it's Cargill or Purdue or a Smithfield. And so what we see is, just to use an example, in North Carolina, in about 15 years, we see bigger and bigger facilities, from small facilities to really big facilities owned, controlled by a Smithfield. And at the same time, in about 15 years, we went from having 15,000 farms with hogs down to only 2,300 now. So farmers are also losing their farms. So we see increases in control, increases in the control of the big ag, and decreases in control by farmers and the role of farmers and also sustainability.
Marion, in the early 1980s, Ronald Reagan famously stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, which led to this explosion called the mergers and acquisitions mania. People like Michael Milken came out and dubbed themselves M&A artists. And this happened in the agriculture industry as well. And by the end of the 80s and throughout the 90s, you had home farms, small farms, just being wiped out by these big ag companies. Willie Nelson running around doing Farm Aid, if you'll recall. Is the solution, if that is the through line of the problem, is the solution to simply start enforcing the Sherman Act and break these big companies up? Or is there another solution that we should be thinking about?
Well, I think there are many solutions. One of the things that's so interesting is there are so many problems wrapped up with one another that we think we can pull one string and the whole thing might unravel. Alexis mentioned that these are confined animal feeding operations. And one of the problems is the way in which we treat animals. And there are a lot of groups that are involved in the animal welfare part of it. And if we couldn't just cram lots of animals in small confined spaces and feed them antibiotics, if you could deal with the animal husbandry, the animal welfare, and deal with the antibiotics, that would help. If you could deal with the concentration of control that you're describing, that would certainly be helpful. If we had greater enforcement of the Clean Water Act and we didn't exempt big ag from other environmental laws, they wouldn't be able to artificially reduce the price of their products and really take the cost of their products and have us as taxpayers and as neighbors and as communities really absorbing the cost of that it really takes to farm these days or to have these facilities. And so there are a lot of things we can do, starting with people making choices about what they're eating and going to farmers markets and doing all the things that people are doing now. So there are a lot of solutions, and we should be moving in all those directions.
Amen. I'm with you. Alexis, I think most people are aware that we've got a problem with bees. Are they the canary in the coal mine here that we should be concerned about? And if so, how? Talk to me about bees.
Well, there's a connection between genetically engineered crops and colony collapse disorder, the disappearance of bees from the hive. And it's been narrowed down just to one class of insecticide, neonics.
And these are the derivatives of nicotine.
That's right.
From tobacco.
Yep, that's exactly right. And they kill bees. That's been proven over and over by scientists. There's a GMO connection. The genetically modified seeds are all coated in neonics. Now, this comes from a relationship between Monsanto and Bayer. And once these companies become so big that they have very, very few competitors in the marketplace, they start to collude. And so we've got Monsanto marketing for Bayer all these neonic insecticides, coating every single genetically modified seed with them.
So they coat the seeds with them, presumably, so that pests, insects, won't eat the seeds while they're in storage or transportation. Is that the deal?
Sure, but they'll do it for any type of seed that they've patented. It's a universal item. It's not something that you can choose when you go to the feed store. It's what Monsanto is offering exclusively.
And I understand that the nicotine-based pesticides are systemic pesticides, meaning they're absorbed into and carried through every part of the plant, continuously present. They're not just, you know, they're on the outside or whatever, they got sprayed and they wash off. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. And that's true for the traits that genetically engineered crops have. So the herbicide-resistant trait, the BT trait. There are crops that produce insecticides by themselves. You can't wash that off.
Right. That's the Bacillus thermophilus is a bacteria that produces a toxin that is a natural insecticide. And I believe it was Monsanto pulled the gene from that bacteria, inserted it into corn, and now the corn produces that. And so it's pretty amazing stuff. David, people are starting to do stuff, things about this. I mean, they're in Jackson County and Josephine County in Oregon this week. During the primary elections, it was on the ballot in those two counties to ban the planting of all GMO products. And it passed. It passed in those two counties.
Yes.
Tomorrow, there's the annual March Against Monsanto. It's going to be in more than 400 cities in 52 countries. That's almost double what it was last year. Last year, it was 286 cities, 36 countries. Almost double, close to it. Tell me about what's going on here politically and in the activist world.
Well, I have to say, listen, you mentioned Jackson County and Josephine County, both won. It's really a remarkable testament. This was an initiative that was put on the ballot in Oregon. Two counties, and they make up the Rogue Valley. Two farmers got together, Chris Hardy and Brian Combs, and they brought their neighbors in. They said, we're having a real problem. The Rogue Valley is an important seed bed. They produce organic seeds. I think they produce 70 to 80% of the organic chard and organic beet seeds in the United States and 50% in the world. And this is a really important organic seed heritage place, and we need to protect it. They're worried because Syngenta and Monsanto are coming in there, and they're they're working with farmers to aggressively get them to plant sugar beets and get them to plant until GMO sugar beets, Roundup Ready sugar beets, they can contaminate chard and a wide variety of other plants. So when they do this, organic farmers not only lose the profit, the price bump, the premium that they get for organics, but they also lose their organic seed integrity when there's contamination, cross-contamination. It's inevitable. Food Democracy Now!, we were in a lawsuit against Monsanto, Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association. We filed that. It lost an appeal of the appeal process in the district court, and the Supreme Court failed to accept it. But the important thing is we saw this a really important battle. Organic Consumers Association helped with it, Center for Food Safety. We joined with these farmers in Oregon, and we said, you know what, we're going to stand up, and we're going to protect this vital seedbed for farmers. And I would just say that it was a huge grassroots victory. I mean, this is a local community of farmers. They organized their neighbors, they organized their friends, and they beat them. Monsanto and Syngenta and DuPont raised $1 million. They outraised them almost 3-1. But on election day, Tuesday, the farmers won 2-1. It was 66% vote to 34 in Jackson County, 58-42 in Josephine County. And this is a massive reversal from some of the defeats that we saw in Prop 37 in California. Mm-hmm. It was a narrow loss, 48.6-51.4 in last year in Washington State, where we lost by 39,000 votes. In Washington, a very painful loss. I want to thank Organic Consumers Association and Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps and Mercola.com for being there for that fight in Washington State. And this year, we're taking the fights to Oregon. There's a ballot initiative that'll be, and in Colorado, the ballot initiatives that'll be on the ballot in this November for the election. The other thing that's happened is two states last year passed bills for GMO labeling, Connecticut and Maine. They both had triggers, basically it stipulated other states have to pass. And then Connecticut was a population base of 20 million in the New England area. And incredibly, it was 2 weeks ago, the governor of Vermont signed a bill, first no strings attached GMO labeling bill. I would say this is a 20-year goal that's been denied organic farmers and American citizens to know what's in their food. 64 other countries around the world have this basic right.
Now, you're not even talking about banning GMOs. You're talking about simply saying to the customer, hey, there's GMO in this product, just like we say there's this much salt in it.
Yeah, and I'll just say I spoke at Monsanto's annual shareholder meeting in January.
You did?
I did. I was there, and I had the chance to tell that audience and to say to Hugh Grant, I said, listen, your family in Scotland can go in a grocery store, and they can buy all the GMOs they want to their heart's content. Now, there's a label on that. I said, we want Monsanto employees to be able to go into grocery stores with the label to buy as many GMO products as they want. And we want mothers in the U.S. to be able to go into a grocery store and see that label. They may or they may not choose to buy those products. It's basic information. But I mean,
I just want to read this to you real quick. This is the names of the countries that will not allow GMO, and they require labeling. Absolutely. Australia, Austria, Belarus, Belgium, Bolivia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Brazil, Bulgaria, Cameroon, China, Croatia, Cyprus, Czech Republic, Denmark, Ecuador, El Salvador, Estonia, Ethiopia, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Iceland, India, Indonesia, Iceland, India, Indonesia, Iceland, they got India again, oh, I see, Italy, Japan, Jordan, Kazakhstan, Kenya, Latvia, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Malaysia, Mali, Malta, Mauritius, Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Peru, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Senegal, Slovakia, Slovenia, South Africa, South Korea, Spain, Sri Lanka, Sweden, Switzerland, Taiwan, Thailand, Tunisia, Turkey. You got to put this back real quick, Rama. Just stay there. Ukraine, United Kingdom, and Vietnam. Okay, let's finish this now.
Their lead attorney, I said, listen, Americans have a right to know. It's a basic democratic right. We both know that Americans probably care more about Miley Cyrus and Kim Kardashian than they do about what they put in their food. But the fact is, it's a democratic right.
And the real question we have to think of is, what happens when nanotechnology is approved on a wide scale? What about synthetic biology? Will we have those rights, a democratic right, to know what's that any food on our table has been produced through synthetic biology?
Yeah.
Which is coming down the pike. Pretty quickly.
This is a pretty fundamental thing, and it's amazing when you think that, you know, the whole Citizens United was decided not on so much on a corporation's right to speak, but the average citizen's right to know. That was the logic that Scalia used to kind of reverse engineer Citizens United. Sure. It's amazing that something very similar to that is not being used for this.
Maybe Scalia will be decided in our favor in a few years.
You never know. You never know. David, Alexis, Marion, thank you all so much for being with us tonight. This is a topic that is not going away. And just once again, tomorrow, the annual March Against Monsanto in 400 cities all across the United States. Thank you.
All right, everybody. So we'll see you for an hour now on the conference line. It's 213-342-3000. And the PIN code tonight is 232323#. And then we'll see you at the top of the next hour back at BBS Radio, the best radio network in the universe. Sat Nam.